This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Later today in California, same-sex couples can go to the courthouse, get a license, and become legally married. It's an historic day, a victory, many will say, for equal rights. But earlier today on Morning Edition, NPR's Barbara Bradley Haggerty reported that some Americans see things very differently, that gay marriages and civil unions are being imposed upon them in violation of their right to religious freedom. For example, a church that refuses to allow a place of worship to be used to celebrate civil unions because of its belief that marriage can only be between a man and a woman. Discrimination, argue proponents of equal rights. First Amendment, respond proponents of religious freedom. Besides, it's their church. We've invited Barbara and some of the people she spoke with to for her story to continue this conversation and what she describes as the looming legal battle on this issue. So do you see a conflict between religious freedom and equal rights? Tell us your story. 800-989-8255 is the phone number. The email address is talk@npr.org. You can also join the conversation on our blog at npr.org/blogofthenation. Later in the program, on the opinion page, Greg Easterbrook wonders why so many Americans feel worse off than they were 5 years ago, when, by most objective standards, things are better. But first, the deepening conflict between religious freedom and equal rights. Barbara Bradley Haggerty is NPR's religion correspondent. She's with us here in Studio 3A. Nice to have you on the program again,
it's
Barbara.
It's great to be here.
And can you give us other examples of how this conflict is playing out?
You know, we're seeing it in a number of places. First, I should say that it's really early days. Only two states have same-sex marriage. Only a handful of states have civil unions. Those are the places where you tend to see these things crop up a little bit more. But essentially, let me just be clear. What happens inside the four walls of the church or mosque or synagogue is protected. So a rabbi or a minister can't be sued for preaching against homosexuality, that homosexuality is a sin. But if the church offers services to the public, like counseling services or education, then they could be challenged if they refuse to include same-sex couples. So that's particularly true of, say, parachurch organizations, which aren't churches, but they're affiliated with a church or kind of organized around a religious belief, Jewish day camps, Campus Crusade for Christ, that kind of thing. Let me tell you about a couple of cases I've found. Just briefly, Catholic Charities in Massachusetts, they got out of the adoption business because Catholic Charities said placing children in same-sex families violated their religious beliefs. They knew they were going to lose in court. Yeshiva University, an Orthodox Jewish university, had to open its married housing to same-sex couples after it was sued. A Lutheran high school in California is being sued when it expelled two girls who were allegedly lesbian. The school holds the belief that homosexuality is a sin, and the girls said this was discrimination. Just a couple of others. A Christian marriage counselor lost her job and her case when she refused to counsel a gay couple on their relationship. And the California Supreme Court is about to decide a case in which a lesbian sued her Christian doctor for refusing IVF services. He said it was against his values. She said it was discrimination. Most of the people I talked to believe that the court will decide in favor of the lesbian. So those are just a few cases.
IVF, in vitro fertilization.
That's right.
Okay, anyway. Let's talk to one of the people in Barbara's story. Jordan Lawrence is a senior counsel for the Alliance Defense Fund. He's with us from the studios of KHOT in Phoenix, Arizona, and it's good of you to be with us today.
Thank you. It's good to be on the show.
And in Barbara's piece, there's a photographer who was caught in this clash, a wedding photographer who declined the opportunity to photograph a same-sex ceremony because he said, well, this violates my religious beliefs. I can't do the pictures properly if I don't believe in it. And well, he was sued for discrimination.
Yes, it's a husband and wife commercial photography company in Albuquerque, New Mexico. This was all done over emails. They just declined to do it. They feel that they, as photographers, as artists, are lending their support to the messages that they produce with their photographs. And the New Mexico Human Rights Commission, we had a trial in January and last April, found them guilty of discrimination and ordered them to pay about $6,600 in attorney's fees. And my thought, very little regard for the First Amendment compelled speech aspects of this case.
Talk to us a little bit about that compelled speech. What do you mean there?
Well, the Supreme Court has a doctrine that it has, and maybe people are familiar with the Boston St. Patrick's Day parade case, where the government can't use an anti-discrimination law to force people to participate or somehow augment or advance messaging that they don't agree with. And I think that that's what that's happening here. I mean, you can think of all sorts of examples that if somebody supports Barack Obama for president, to force them to take photographs for John McCain campaign literature or something would be a compelled speech. And if the government says, we'll punish you if you don't do it for discrimination on, you know, basis of political beliefs or something, that would violate the First Amendment. And what we're seeing now is that this in this debate on same-sex marriage, there's increasing use of these non-discrimination laws to basically demonize those who hold to a traditional view and to punish them and say, well, you know, you lost all your rights when you entered the marketplace and you just have to do things that violate your conscience and there's no religious liberties here at all, even though that's the one of the main rights protected in the First Amendment.
Why is this different? A photographer offers commercial services. Why is this different from a lunch counter operator who says, I'm not going to serve you because you're African-American or because you're homosexual, for that matter?
Well, I don't think that that's what's going on here, because if there's a black person at a lunch counter, they're not asking, will you, lunch owner, counter owner, participate in my messaging? And this isn't race. This is saying we want you to use your photographic skills, for example, or your church building in the Ocean Grove case to be the main place that we put on this ceremony or photograph this ceremony that's all full of messaging that same-sex marriage is okay. Those who say it's only a man and a woman are wrong. And I think it's a very, very different dynamic that we have going on here.
Let's get a different take on this story. Let's go to Hai Feldblum. She's director of the Federal Legislation Clinic and a professor of law at Georgetown University. She was also featured in Barbara's piece this morning, and she's with us here in Studio 3A. Thanks very much for coming in.
Absolutely.
And is this a case of equal rights, or is this a case of religious freedom?
Oh, it's a case of both. I mean, we have religious beliefs on the side of people who are owning businesses. We have an equality, fairness, right, on the part of people who are trying to get their wedding photographed. So I think given that, let's be clear about the two sides of the spectrum, which it sounds like has already been put out on the table. Okay, one, I think we're all agreeing that someone shouldn't be able to say in a commercial setting, I'm not going to serve you lunch because you're black or because you are a lesbian. Right? You shouldn't be allowed to do that. If we allowed those types of exceptions, forget about getting any equality for people.
Well, Jordan Lawrence just said it's not the same. It's different.
No, that's right. So I'm saying on one side of the spectrum is agreeing that regardless of what your religious beliefs are, you can't not serve someone. On the other side, he mentioned the Hurley case, which was a case of the Irish gay group wanting to march in the parade. There, the Supreme Court said to the gay Irish group, we are not going to force the parade owners to let you march because that is forcing them to say something they don't believe in. Maybe lots of groups maybe didn't like that. The ACLU actually supported the parade organizers. I also believe that is a case of forced speech. So those are the two clear spectrums. Now we have something that's more muddied. And part of what I believe and have been saying for some time is that we are, as a country, moving into a system where gay people are out and around and say this is who we are, and society has to figure out a way to deal with that. The answer is not just to say, oh, I have a religious belief and therefore I don't have to treat you equally. It's more complicated than that.
Mm-hmm. And Barbara, let me ask you, most of the cases, this is interesting, the photography case, because it's a commercial case. Nevertheless, most of the other cases you were describing seem to involve religious institutions, or as you described them, para-religious institutions.
Right. I think those tend to be the easier or the larger targets. I think you're going to see a lot of cases of private companies that have, as part of their values, that, you know, we're a Christian company, and therefore we believe that X, Y, and Z, and one of the things we believe is that homosexuality is a sin. But I think more likely what we're going to see is Catholic charities, you know, Lutheran social services, Jewish social services being sued because, A, they're larger, and B, I don't know, well, you know, I don't know if there is, I think they are probably less protected in one way. Many of these places take federal money or state money. And so if they take state money or federal money, essentially they cannot then go out and break the law, laws that the federal government has said they can't break. And so I think what we've got here is many of these parachurch organizations, you know, they are taking money. Therefore, they have to obey federal and state laws. And that's why I think we're going to see more cases against parachurch organizations and churches.
Jordan Lawrence, do you agree?
I think that we will, because I think that this is not an issue that people who support same-sex marriage frequently are not viewing as a matter of a difference of opinion and freedom of speech. But as Professor Feldblum said, they view it as discrimination where, you know, we're talking about, for example, in California, the voters are likely or at least have a strong possibility of overturning this court decision in November and redefining marriage as one man and one woman. To say, well, this is an act of discrimination, to me, is basically saying it's inevitable that same-sex marriage is going to be legalized, that the voters aren't going to change their minds, and anybody who disagrees can only say it within the four walls of their house of worship, and they're going to be punished for discrimination or lose their tax exemption if they do it anywhere else. I think that's very draconian and very authoritarian and against the basic principles of the First Amendment.
And, hi, Feldblum, just briefly, in the parade case you're talking about, well, they may have been taking federal money, but they're marking on public streets.
Right, and yet they were allowed to exclude the group. You see, right. I mean, Barb is right to say that we've got different strands here. When you're taking federal or state money, I think there's a different issue. You have to play. You can't use that money to discriminate. When you have something that's clearly expressive association, which is what that parade is, yes, then the First Amendment is going to protect you. But if you're out doing a business, then I think there might be a difference between a business that's healthcare, which is what the case is in California, and the business of photographing a wedding where you feel there's a real artistic involvement there. And on the latter, on the artistic involvement, I think there you think about, if I'm in this business, why don't I make sure to have someone on my staff who will photograph a same-sex wedding? It's just about being aware of who is out there in society.
It's a husband and wife team, so maybe they're... Anyway, we'll get back to more of these issues in just a moment. Stay with us. If you'd like to join the conversation on this discussion between the conflict between religious freedom and equal rights, give us a call. 800-989-8255. Email us, talk@npr.org. I'm Neil Conan. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Today, most counties in California will legalize civil unions for same-sex couples, but as states have legalized same-sex partnerships, the rights of gay couples have come up against the rights of religious groups in some instances. We're talking with NPR religion correspondent Barbara Bradley Haggerty, who reported earlier today on Morning Edition. Our other guests are Jordan Lawrence, the lawyer for the owners of a photography company. They refuse to shoot same-sex unions on the basis of their religious beliefs. Also with us is Hai Feldblum, who is director of the Federal Legislation Clinic and a professor of law at Georgetown University with us here in Studio 3A. We want to hear from you. Is there a conflict between equal rights and religious freedom? Tell us your story. 800-989-8255. Email is talk@npr.org. You can read what other listeners have to say on our blog at npr.org/blogofthenation. Let's see, we get a caller on the line, and this is Rhianne. Rhianne's with us from Rochester in New York.
Hi. I sort of have a strange take on the whole thing. I am gay, and my partner and I do want to get married. We actually have kids together. And I want governmental recognition, but I'm not as concerned about the religious aspect of it. I think that churches have the right to, you know, to agree with or not agree with the choices that I make, and I'm not worried about the church agreeing with it. I'm worried about the rights of my children and stepchildren to, you know, be able to inherit my property, or my partner to be able to have access to my medical records, or things like that.
So the same kinds of things that are accorded, obviously, to married couples, heterosexual married couples, but
exactly, but on a governmental level.
Barbara, is that what we're talking about? That the churches be forced to conduct services?
No, churches will not be forced to conduct services. I mean, that's clearly protected by the First Amendment. But if the caller wanted to get some kind of treatment for, you know, IVF. She might have more of a problem. We don't know. I mean, it's clear that churches, in their activity as churches, can operate according to their religious beliefs. But the question is, when they operate in a more public sphere, they offer services to the public, they take government money, then, you know, it's a lot fuzzier and probably probably they will probably end up losing a lot of the cases. But in terms of churches having to recognize her union, now that's they'll never have to do that.
Hmm. Right, and I think that's one of the things that a lot of people have confusion about is, you know, they say, I don't want, you know, my church to have to recognize gay couples or whatever. And, you know, in the respect that most people are thinking in terms of, you know, does a person get, you know, identified as married or not when they go to church or, you know, whatever. I mean, I think that they're not likely to have to deal with that. If the church isn't going to accept it, they're not going to accept it. It'll just mean that churches have to be more careful in the way that they, you know, do public, you know, public programs that are needing to abide by the laws, you know, of the government, but that doesn't include everything.
No,
and I think there are a lot of things that don't include that.
Just one thing that might come up, though, if you're a member of a church and you want to lead a group or be at a, you know, church summer camp and help the youth, it may be that the church would say it's in our prerogative not to allow you and your partner to be a married couple at the summer camp. And so there are fuzzy areas that actually could affect you.
And let me ask Jordan Lawrence, do you see this as the beginning of that slippery slope to the point where churches would be, in some cases, forced to do things they don't believe in? We must be having problems with our... Jordan, are you there? We must be having problems with our connection to Phoenix, Arizona. Stay with us, and we'll try to get him back. Anyway,
just one other thing I might mention is, you know, I think the idea of gay couples not acknowledging their relationships is more a fact of life for many gay couples than, you know, it might be nice to. I mean, you have to remember a lot of, for instance, resort places. If you want to go to the Bahamas, there are going to be a lot of places where it's illegal.
Yes,
you know,
but
you can't walk down the street holding your friend's hand or your wife's hand, much less anything else.
That's a different government, though, and we're not talking about the Bahamian government.
What I mean is we all live at least part of our lives often closeted anyway, and
yeah.
So the fact that a church might ask that is not a shock to most people.
Rianne, thanks very much for the call. And Jordan Lawrence, as I understand it, is back with us. But I wanted to ask you if you see this as the beginning of a slippery slope where more and more religious activities are going to be, as churches would see it, interfered with.
Yeah. Yes. And the examples we have in Europe and in Canada show a very restrictive view of religious liberty in all of this. And I think the Ocean Grove, New Jersey case shows that we can't have a cramped view. Well, that this facility on the boardwalk was open to the public in the sense that people could walk in there. But this ministry had been pretty consistent in limiting the use to religious meetings and others. They just weren't, you know, renting it for some convention of business owners or something like that. And so if we're going to say that basically religious liberty only applies within four walls, you can't apply it at all to your business, and even if to the religious group, we still may reject and revoke its tax exemption, I think that we are in very much danger of losing our religious liberties. And I think that we have to increase the zone of protection to something broader. Because what people are doing is they're saying we're responding to a snub. Now, they may view it as a deep and hurtful snub, but it's not like they can't get photographers, they can't find other facilities. They're basically trying to force people to say, you may not speak against what I'm doing, and we're going to have the government punish you when you do.
That intake of breath you heard was from Professor Feldbaum.
Yes, responding to the snub. I don't think we help ourselves as a society if we overplay the fear here. So let me repeat again what Barb said, and then let me respond to the snub point. We protect religious liberty in this country. That will mean that churches will not have to do weddings. That will mean that lots of protection will be there around summer camps and other things that are very religious. However, gay people in society, we are now out there. We are walking around. We are in couples. And we don't expect that when a pavilion has been used for lots of events, and not just religious events, that we can then be told, oh, we're not going to allow it for your event. What my plea to this country is the following, that gay people understand that religious people often have very sincere beliefs against homosexuality, and we should not be forcing religious people to do things that they should not have to do. And a plea to the religious people of this country to realize that they cannot simply use a statement of their religious beliefs to keep gay people out of the fullness of society. As a society, let's figure out the right line down the middle.
Barbara, let me ask you, and this exchange, I think, illustrates it. To some degree, both sides see themselves as oppressed minorities.
You know, that's really interesting that you say that, because that was something that I heard when I reported on the Ocean Grove case up in Ocean Grove, New Jersey, where a gay couple, lesbian couple, had wanted to use a pavilion that was owned by the Methodist Retreat Center. And both of them said, you know, we feel like the victims here. So you've got these strongly held beliefs. In some ways, it's interesting because as I've looked at it, at least in these early stages, I do think that the same-sex couples are prevailing on in most of these cases. Well, in fact, the ones I've looked at, they are prevailing. And I think the reason is, and I think a lot, this is interesting for churches to understand, the reason is that the Supreme Court is actually made religious liberty a bit of a stepchild in a way. Back in 1990, in what I call the Peyote case, a case of Employment Division versus Smith, basically the Supreme Court said, look, if there is a law on the books, i.e., you can't, you know, ingest peyote because it's a drug, if there's a law on the books, then you, Native Americans, cannot use it in your religious ceremony. What that can easily be transferred to is, if there is a law on the books that you can't discriminate against same-sex couples, then you, religious organization, cannot use that, your strongly held beliefs, as an excuse to break the law. And so what I think we're beginning to see is a trend very much in favor of the equality rights over the religious liberty rights. I'm probably getting Jordan a little angry here, but that's just my take on it.
Well, let's give Jordan a chance to respond and to ask if you eventually see this going into federal court.
And Barbara, I couldn't get angry with you. You're too good of a reporter and nice of a person. I am not as pessimistic. The Alliance Defense Fund is doing both these cases in Ocean Grove and Elaine Photography in New Mexico. These are at the earliest stages. And what we have found is that these commissions tend to have little regard for First Amendment rights. And they just say there's an act of discrimination. We don't understand the Constitution very well. We're not used to applying it. You lose. And it's only until you get up into the higher appellate courts that they take the First Amendment issues more seriously. Now, I think the Boy Scout case from 2000 and the Hurley case, the Boston St. Patrick's Day Parade case from 1995, are more indicative. And there's obviously that, as Professor Feldblum was talking about, there's increased visibility of those who are advocating for homosexual rights and homosexual behavior, et cetera. But I think that this is an ongoing dynamic that I think that people can't say, oh, it's just inevitable. You religious people have lost, so just give up. I think not only in the sense of arguing about this, but see, when we have, for example, and this is where I feel that this could turn back on people if they don't respect religious liberties. What if there is a former homosexual man and a former lesbian who get married and want to make a statement with their ceremony that we can be liberated from the homosexual lifestyle? Whatever people think of that, that's the statement they want to make with their wedding ceremony. And some photographer who is not like Elaine Photography says, I think that's fraudulent. I think they're in denial that they've changed their sexual orientation. I refuse to take photographs and further that messaging. Under the New Mexico Human Rights Commission's reasoning, that would be sexual orientation discrimination by a public accommodation, and they'd have to compel that photographer to take the photos or punish him with fines. I don't think that's what we want in a free society under the First Amendment.
Is he right, Professor Feldblum?
Well, no, I don't actually think so. I mean, the fact is that I think that if you run a wedding photography service, even if you don't like that those two ex-gays are getting married, you better have someone on your staff who will take those pictures. I mean, but where I think that where it's more wrong is that I do not believe that these commissions are not respecting and understanding some of the religious freedom issues here. I do believe that on some of these situations, the religious person should be able to prevail, and in others they should not be able to prevail. And those are decisions that the law, I think, is right now relatively well equipped to deal with. I actually agree with Barb that I think the Supreme Court's decision was somewhat unfortunate in the Peyote case, but I actually think it's irrelevant when these are all done as expression and speech cases. And I think we will get to the right resolution as a society, but only if we respect each other. And I personally very much respect the concerns of religious people, and I think the analog to that on the other side would be people not saying the greater visibility of people advocating homosexual rights as opposed to the greater visibility of people living their lives with honesty and dignity. That's what it's about for gay people.
Hi, Feldblum of Georgetown University, where she's professor of law. Also with us, Jordan Lawrence, who defended the photographer sued by a same-sex couple for refusing to photograph their marriage, and senior counselor for the Alliance Defense Fund. Also with us, NPR's religious affairs correspondent, Barbara Bradley Haggerty. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let's get Nicholas on the line. Nicholas calling us from Modesto in California.
Yes. I just had a question. Has anybody really discussed what defines a group to be discriminated against? Because earlier it had been mentioned that the homosexuals are using discrimination as a defense, or rather a...
No, defense, I think, is the right word, yeah.
Yeah. I'm an African-American myself. I was born that way. When someone gets old, it's something you can't prevent. I mean, personally, I believe that homosexuality is a choice, so I don't really feel that discrimination laws should apply.
Professor Feldblum, what brings this in under discrimination clause?
Sure. In each of these cases that we're dealing with, the state or the locality has decided that it is appropriate to say that you should not discriminate on the basis of sexual orientation. So the only places where gay people or gay couples can bring these cases are in localities or states where the government has already decided that sexual orientation is more like race, is more like sex, and should not be a legitimate grounds for discrimination. And I will tell you, both as a lesbian and as someone who knows lots and lots of gay people, we experience our sexual orientation the same way that you experienced your race. But the point is here, we would be in localities where that debate has already happened and where the government has decided that, in fact, sexual orientation is more like race and sex. And again, for the caller, I would say the important thing in this is in every case that you hear the lawyer for Alliance for the
Alliance lawyer, Defense Fund.
Alliance Defense Fund. What you need to do as a matter of legal doctrine is substitute that you would be allowing that religious exemption for someone to do it based on race or based on gender. Because from a legal matter, that has once a state has decided to prohibit discrimination based on sexual orientation, the legal doctrine will be the same for sexual orientation or for race.
And Jordan Lawrence, is that right?
Well, I'm not sure that's exactly right, because the Supreme Court has set different standards for race, for sex discrimination, and it said when anyone asserts a First Amendment right, there has to be a compelling governmental interest. And so I think that these things all play out very differently. Just because we might get a different answer in race, for example, doesn't mean all business owners with beliefs lose their First Amendment freedoms at the marketplace gate. I think that that's a really extreme view and a huge expansion of governmental power and limiting freedom of people. I just want to say, too, I don't think that sexual orientation is a matter of choice the way that, you know, people voluntarily, you know, choose things off a menu. And I would agree with Professor Feldblum with that. But this is something we're talking about manifesting in a behavior, or it's by self-identification. And that I think just to draw an analogy to race is not exactly the same thing, because race does not express itself in behavior the way that the sexual conduct would.
Well, I just from what I understand, there's kind of a distinction that you can make between state courts with their state laws, interpreting state laws that might protect sexual orientation, versus the federal courts, where the Supreme Court has not found yet that that gay homosexuality is a protected class. So it's different
from
gender, right, and it's different from from race. And so, in that way, I think probably a goal of a lot of the opponents of a lot of the supporters of religious liberties, we'll put it that way, their goal would probably be to get this into federal court so that it could go up to the U.S. Supreme Court, because I think maybe things are more in their line there.
Nicholas, thanks very much for the phone call.
Thank you.
And we'll continue taking up a couple of more questions about this conflict between religious liberty and equal rights. So stay with us. And we'll also go to the Talk of the Nation opinion page and talk with Greg Easterbrook about his argument that, things are, in fact, better than ever. But most Americans certainly don't feel that way. Stay with us. I'm Neil Conan. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. And today we're continuing a conversation begun earlier today on Morning Edition when Barbara Bradley Haggerty reported on a number of cases that illustrate a looming conflict between religious liberty and equal rights, cases where it's not clear what's going to happen. Well, at least in several cases that she reported on, so far the equal rights element of that seems to be triumphing. It's not clear, however, that that will continue to be the case. Barbara's here with us in Studio 3A, along with Hai Feldblum, a professor of law at Georgetown University, director of the Federal Legislation Clinic there. And also with us is Jordan Lawrence, who is a senior counsel for the Alliance Defense Fund. If you'd like to join us, 800-989-8255, email talk at npr.org. And coming up, the opinion page, but first let's get back to the phones and go to Susan. Susan's with us from Kansas City.
Hi. First of all, I'd like to say that I am straight, and I have a question. If this chapel was receiving, or the church that sponsored it was receiving, any tax benefits, because I believe that if it was, then it should cater to everybody, regardless of race or creed or sexual identification, because we all pay taxes.
And Barb,
if you get the benefits, you should cater to everybody.
Barbara, this is the Ocean Grove, New Jersey case, I think she's referring to, that we've been talking about.
That's right. They were receiving tax benefits. The state revoked the benefits for the pavilion area only, not for the rest of the church
area. So they lost their tax-exempt status for
that. That's right. That's right. But I have to say that if that were the case, then no church could get any kind of tax benefit, or any tax exemption could be in jeopardy.
That's right.
Right. So, and the government has made a decision that churches will receive tax exemptions. And so, I was thinking about this when I was interviewing Scott Hoffman. I thought of what Job said, the thing that I have greatly feared has come upon me, meaning that, you know, churches probably are shaking in their boots about this, because I think there could be a possibility that tax exemptions begin to be chipped away.
So I'm calling from the Great Heartland, and what I'm hearing you say is that some of these churches, quote-unquote, up in Idaho that preach white pride, and that people of African-American descent or Hispanic descent or Jewish descent are entitled to the same tax exemptions as the local Presbyterian church that welcomes anyone and everyone.
Jordan, is she right?
Well, I think she may not be, because of the Bob Jones decision, where Bob Jones University got its tax exemption revoked for not allowing interracial dating. But I think that the problem is that the Catholic Church requires its priests to be Catholics. They won't ordain an atheist or a Buddhist. Is that religious discrimination? There's many churches that'll say our theology is the one way to God, and the other religious groups aren't there or not. Do they all get their tax exemption revoked because they're non-inclusive? I think they allow anybody in. And in fact, even in this pavilion, this couple was allowed to go in there. They could sit. They could do things. What they couldn't do is put on a ceremony with messaging different than, and in conflict with what the church is saying, just as an atheist could go and sit in there but couldn't conduct a "Why the Bible is False" conference at that pavilion in New Jersey. So I think that, and also I'm not sure, I think people got to be very careful when they start viewing tax exemption as like a tax break or a government benefit that can be revoked if the body is espousing something that the government doesn't agree. That becomes a tremendous weapon.
Hai Feldblum?
Well, to answer your question directly, that church that's espousing white supremacy, et cetera, I think that church is going to continue to keep its tax exemption, even though you're right, we as taxpayers pay that. But I think we do that because we do see that that is the core of religious liberty. But if that church opens up a pavilion where there are events that go on, opens up a daycare center, opens up a school, I mean, starts interacting with the public more generally, and then says, but we won't serve certain people, and what we want to do is essentially hide behind a sense of you're forcing us to speak in a certain way. That's what happened with the Bob Jones case. Large institution that said they allowed black students in, just like they allowed these folks to sit in the pavilion, but they did not allow black students to date white students. So that's pretty much where we've drawn it in the country right now as a line, and I think that's probably the right line in terms of religious liberty, that our tax money should not be used to support discrimination against others if the religious entity has moved into the public sector in a more deliberate way than just their own sermons that they're giving from their churches.
Susan, thanks very much for the call.
You're welcome.
Here's an email from Kelly in Minnetonka, Minnesota. As an animator and illustrator, I've turned down many commissions for material I wasn't comfortable with for one reason or another. Do I need to fear being forced to accept a job for animating a commercial for a religious sect or illustrating an illustration promoting something I personally don't agree with? She concludes, it's absurd. Does Jordan Lawrence write to worry?
I think Kelly makes an excellent point, and that the undifferentiated application in sort of a buzzsaw fashion of these public accommodation laws makes everything like serving hamburgers at a lunch counter. There's no artistic judgment for a photographer or for an artist. They do not take into consideration that these are ceremonies, same-sex marriage ceremonies, that are conveying huge amounts of messaging. And just to say, well, that's just like a lunch counter and we can force all these people who get into the business world to do this, I think is taking a very narrow and wrong view of the First Amendment rights. I think that these are much more complicated and that we want people to exercise conscience when they operate their businesses and just not say, well, I've surrendered everything now that I'm earning profit and I can't make any moral judgments at all about what I'm doing.
Professor,
well, sounding like me now. And then I said to you,
more like me, Professor.
It was not just like a lunch counter, that these things are more complicated, but you also can't answer it by just saying, oh, it's expressive. So, Kelly, again, directly to answer your question, no, you don't have to worry by the fact that, you know, there's some things you want to draw and others you don't, because as a general matter, the government does not interfere with what you want to do. That's one of the bases in our country. The government does interfere on certain bases. Like they will say, you can't refuse to draw something because the person who asked you to do it is black, or can't refuse to draw something because the person who asked you to do it is gay if you happen to live in a state where they passed a gay rights law. So what we're talking about is situations in which something occurs where you feel like what you're being asked to do now by not discriminating against a gay person will force you to do something that is against your sincere beliefs. And yet we want to make sure that gay people can feel like they can call up businesses and not be discriminated against because they're gay. That's the area in which what I would implore our society to do is not go to the extremes of either side, but to figure out how can we ensure that both equalities have a role here. The equality of gay people to be able to live openly in society and the equality of people with religious or other moral beliefs not to be forced into activities that are not appropriate.
And Barbara.
But hi, this is what I don't understand about what you're saying is you come from the context that this is all about denying the dignity of homosexual persons. But I think I can imagine situations like I need a speechwriter to help me with my speech on why I left the homosexual lifestyle. And if you won't write that speech for me, you're discriminating against me on the basis of my sexual orientation. And I think there's all sorts of situations where business owners could be compelled into a clear messaging situation. It's not just a commercial transaction. And then I think that this Kelly from Minnetonka with her animator suggestion is I don't hear you saying, yeah, those are situations we got to protect those business owners from not being forced to do that kind of messaging, because these are the situations that I think are going to come up.
I'm afraid we're going to have to leave it there. And I know we're going to be back discussing this in future shows. Fascinating. Jordan Lawrence, thanks very much for being with us today.
Thank you.
Jordan Lawrence, senior counsel for the Alliance Defense Fund with us from KHOT in Phoenix, Arizona. And Hi Feldblum, professor, thanks very much for being with us from Georgetown University with us in Studio 3A. And Barbara Bradley Haggerty, who reported the piece this morning on Morning Edition, NPR's religious affairs correspondent. Thank you.
It was great.
You're welcome.
The opinion page coming up.